Well, if you're still here, I assume that you survived the earthquake and the eclipse. I take it that you and your families are all well and weren't struck down by apocalyptic energies unleashed by cosmic forces of evil. I say this because one of the wisest and most sagacious sages in Congress, Marjorie Taylor Greene, warned us that God is sending America strong signs to tell us to repent. Earthquakes and eclipses and many more things to come. I pray that our country listens. I don't know. I'm a man who prays often and am devoted to trying to perceive God's presence on earth. How do I keep missing those divine signs that American politicians see so vividly? It's frustrating to me that God sends so many signs to others, and I keep missing them. I'm willing, even eager, to repent for my misdeeds. But why a minor earthquake in New Jersey to warn me to turn from my evil ways? Why not just tell me? Or put an earthquake under my apartment. That will catch my attention. You realize that what's happening in the world is our fault, right? We cause forest fires. The Rothschilds pay for space lasers. Everyone knows that Israel is the cause of global warming. That's why climate activists march against the Jewish state. We invented COVID. And the coming invasion of what is estimated to be a trillion cicadas are our doing. And it's appropriate to mention that during these last few days before Passover, you know, earthquakes, darkness, locusts, cicadas. I reflected on anti-Semitism during our recent mission to Israel. There's still a cloud of pain and uncertainty hanging over the country, but never, not once, did I feel threatened. I never looked over my shoulder in anxiety, never walked through metal detectors, never endured a shower of spittle-laced rage from those filled with irrational hate. I never once encountered anyone who hid outward signs of Jewish expression. And notwithstanding the many blood-curdling threats from Israel's sworn enemies, and despite standing right under missiles fired from Gaza, I never felt vulnerable or anxious. And I keep asking myself why. And it dawned on me that this immediate explosion of Jew hatred in the West, even before the sun set on October 7th, was a reaction not to the use of military power. Israel hadn't even begun to respond because she was desperately trying to fend off murdering marauders in her own cities and towns. Rather, it was the opposite. This Jew hatred was and remains a reaction to the perception of Jewish weakness. It is what it always was. Not the exercise of Jewish power. For 2,000 years, we didn't have power, but the perception of Jewish weakness, that Israel is vulnerable. Historically, this is what arouses Jew haters to action. The assumption that Jews are weak, the feeling of impunity. I now believe that part of what aroused the anti-Zionist BDS from the river to the sea crowds on October 7th was the attack itself. Israel was invaded. Hamas fighters were in Israel proper. They killed, maimed, and took captive thousands of Israelis. It awakened a frenzy of ecstatic hope and a kind of delirium. For one brief moment, it looked to them that Israel could be defeated. It was exhilarating. It was energizing, cried one associate professor at Cornell. Palestinians are a beacon for us all, tweeted an assistant professor at Albany Law School. They felt empowered by Hamas's rampage. Many had no moral qualms about the brutality and cruelty. They were galvanized by it. Others considered the savagery and inconvenience that needed to be addressed. And so the excuse-making machine began operating at full force. At first, this is what righteous resistance looks like. It may be cruel, but it's justified. Never mind that the path to peaceful resolution has been open to the Palestinians for over a century. Then, when the video of the actual resistance became too hard to view, it was, well, it wasn't really that bad. Then, if it was bad, it was Israel that killed most of those Israelis. And then, in a contemporary version of Holocaust denial, it didn't actually happen at all. Because, as everyone knows, Islam forbids this kind of cruelty. I welcome all legitimate criticism of Israeli actions. From fellow Jews, for sure, but also from every corner of the globe. I do not consider disapproval of a country's government inappropriate. Criticism of Israel's conduct of the war since October 7th is not ipso facto anti-Semitic or even necessarily an expression of hostility. Many critics are motivated by concern for Israel. I can speak for hours about my own disapproval of this government from the first day of its formation. And I have. If you find yourself questioning decisions and doubting policies, keep reading, keep inquiring, keep debating. You're in good company. Israelis themselves do this all the time. It goes without saying, as I have often preached, I grieve for the loss of innocent lives on all sides, including Palestinians. That's what Jews do. It's how we think. We do not glorify or celebrate bloodshed. To the contrary, we mourn the taking of life, even in self-defense. The tragic attack on the World Central Kitchen was devastating to me. Those of you who traveled with our synagogue to Poland after Russia invaded Ukraine, you'll remember that we met several people associated with the WCK. They're heroes and courageous souls. I urge all of you, especially those of you who are increasingly anxious about this war, to go to Israel, as our delegation did. Spend some time there. Speak with Israelis, not only here, over there. It's good for you. You'll understand in a much deeper way, both intellectually and emotionally, that the hardships on Palestinian civilians that the Western media portrays as its primary concern is not the only issue at stake. It's an issue. It's part of the narrative. It's not the only issue. The broader context is a genocidal terrorist organization lurking a mile away from Israel's border that has promised to repeat October 7th over and over and over again. The broader context is an Islamist fundamentalist Iranian regime that is sworn to wipe Israel off the map and has launched a proxy war on Israel from 7 fronts. We couldn't even travel to the north because Hezbollah is firing rockets daily and caused the evacuation of 80,000 people, refugees in their own national home. And the broader context is that Israelis did not wake up on October 7th and decide to attack Palestinians. It was the opposite. There was a ceasefire in place on October 6th. I was at the rally for the hostages on Sunday morning. Does anyone remember them? Does anyone look at the insane cruelty of Hamas and insist that they release people who they simply stole from their living rooms and their bedrooms? There were an estimated 7,000 people at the Sunday rally in Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza. No one shouted death to America. No one assaulted the police. To the contrary, I saw many people thank the police at rally's end. No one shut down traffic. No one shouted death to Palestinians. I have not met every Jew in the world, but I have met or have been in contact with thousands of Jews and Israelis since October 7th, including survivors of that massacre. I have not met even one who wishes harm to Palestinians. Not even one. To the contrary, practically everyone I meet is saddened that through the act of defending their own lives, they're forced to take the lives of Palestinians. Is it only me? Or does it seem to you that the Western world is spinning off of its moral axis? Increasingly, we're living in this surreal reality. More Jews are massacred in one day since the Holocaust, and immediately protests erupt against Jews. Israel is accused of genocide, and the genocidal forces that launched this war are forgiven or forgotten. Germany is hauled before the International Court of Justice by Nicaragua for so-called collaborating with genocide. Germany! Nicaragua! When the War of Independence ended in 1949, a war caused by Arab rejection of the two-state solution proposed by the United Nations. There were approximately 750,000 Palestinian refugees. They became refugees because they lost the war they started. Today, there are 5 million Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, and approximately 2 million Israeli citizens of Palestinian descent. Does this look like genocide to you? Who is the Israeli in charge of this so-called genocide? What utter incompetence. October 7 revealed the rot inside our most cherished institutions, moldering and spreading for years, infecting previously healthy organs of our body politic. It's more than this or that university president or head of school or student union or media personality or social justice leader's hypocrisy or squad of politicians. It's the entire philosophy of Western liberalism that is under assault. That's the reason that October 7th is not only critical for Israelis or for Jews. It goes to the heart of our way of life in the West. If the forces of evil prevail, oases of freedom will die. We do not want to live in a world of lawlessness, a world that contextualizes, whitewashes, or justifies brutality. A world of no arts, no letters, no society, and worst of all, continual fear and danger of violent death and the life of man, solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. If we do not prevail, The assault on liberty and decency will not end in the Middle East. It will come to the Midwest. It will not stop at Kibbutz Be'eri. It will invade Brussels, Barcelona, Berlin, Baltimore. The liberal values we were raised on, that served the Jewish community and all minorities so well, are under severe strain. And even if I am the last liberal in America, I will stand alone and warn of the pending disaster. For if murder is wrong, it is universally wrong, even against Jews. If rape is wrong, it is universally wrong, even against Jews. If kidnapping is wrong, it is universally wrong, even against Jews. If terrorism is wrong, it is universally wrong, even against Jews. If freedom is right, it is universally right, even for Jews. If self-determination is right, it is universally right, even for Jews. If self-defense is right, it is universally right, even for Jews. If human dignity is right, it is universally right, even for Jews. We all share the guilt for allowing this corruption of liberal values. We must all share the responsibility for restoring our country's moral sanity. Neither I nor our synagogue engage in partisan politics. So allow me to express a nonpartisan word to all of our friends in elected office from the Democratic Party, from one who is finely attuned to American Jewish sentiment. Do not take American Jews for granted. I have spoken with so many American Jews in the past few months who have surprised me with their anxiety about developments in the Democratic Party and their perception that it is becoming increasingly hostile to Israel and increasingly tolerant of anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism in its own ranks. Be careful. The results of the upcoming election do not only depend on Michigan. And if Michigan, there are many different constituencies in that state. In planning for the itinerary of the Israel mission, I scheduled one morning picking strawberries. The nature of our visit was not volunteerism. Many other American Jews have traveled to Israel specifically for volunteer work, including quite a few of our own congregants. Still, I felt it was important to help out at least a little bit while we were there. And it wasn't make work. The Israeli agricultural sector especially is in urgent need of workers. So the 30 of us spent several hours picking and sorting strawberries that would be in the supermarkets that afternoon. I didn't expect that this morning would be among my most moving experiences in Israel. First, I guess it was good just being under the Israeli sun and sweating a little bit. Second, as I bent down to pick the fruit, it was noticeable that a third of the strawberries had rotted. I asked the manager of the field whether it's normal to lose so many strawberries during the harvest period. And he told me they spoiled only because of the war, because of lack of workers. And as I was picking, I became increasingly angry just looking at the fruit that rotted and sorting out the healthy-looking strawberries from the ones that needed to be trashed. And I kept on saying to him, look at what these Hamas monsters have done. They managed to invade every corner of our lives, even the fruit we buy in the markets. They unleashed the poison of anti-Semitism, which is still intensifying and affecting our very way of life 6,000 miles away. They let loose the dogs of war that brought so much pain and so much suffering to our people and to their own people. But over time, it wasn't only anger that I felt. I also felt gratitude and even optimism. Perhaps the Israeli sun does that to you. There's another growing season just down the road. The fruit will grow back better, plumper, juicier than before. Talmudic rabbis taught that the fruit of the land of Israel was so luscious that it tasted like syrup. Some rabbis said you had to eat the fruit with salt because the fruit was so sweet. The land is described as flowing with milk and honey because, according to the Talmud, the fruit is fatter than milk and sweeter than honey. Dear friends, we have some difficult days ahead. Days of anxiety, concern, uncertainty, and loss. But do not despair. Jews are not a despairing people. Better days are ahead. I promise you. And soon, perhaps next spring, certainly in seasons to come, in the words of the prophet Isaiah, Habaim Yashresh Yaakov. In days to come, Jacob shall take root, Israel shall sprout and blossom, and the face of the land will be covered with fruit. Thank you.